This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
The Chinese stock market rallied today after a week-long mess. However, from APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's been a wild first week of the year for China's stock market, like a roller coaster that mainly goes down with a little rise in the end. The CSI 300 index in Shanghai fell 9.4% this week, but that's by gaining 2% today. Still, the bump today may be more a feat of financial civil engineering than the result of calmer investors. Let's go to Shanghai, where we find Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz. Morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
So after officials in China were forced to halt trading on the stock exchange there several times, twice in a week, today we had some stability, almost like nothing happened the other day. What is going on?
After the shortest day in Chinese trading history, a whopping 14 minutes yesterday, the regulatory commission that oversees the Shanghai exchange had an emergency meeting. They decided to scrap the newly installed circuit breaker system meant to halt trading when shares plunged too quickly. It was having the opposite effect on trading. It was actually causing a frenzied sell-off of shares rather than preventing it.
And I understand there were some new rules for the big shareholders that were announced today?
Yeah, today was supposed to be the expiration date of a government ban implemented in July on shareholders who own more than 5% of any listed company on the exchange from selling shares. So to avoid another market crash today, officials issued a new ban that prevents these big shareholders from selling more than 1% of their total shares for the next 3 months. They've also been ordered to give the stock exchange 15 days notice if they plan to sell any of their shares.
So, Rob, for people who hear me say the key index on the Shanghai exchange went up 2% today, problems there are taken care of. What is your answer?
Yeah, I mean, this is not a free market. And that's why today everything on the exchange seemed hunky-dory. There aren't many investors left who are free to sell shares on the Shanghai stock exchange. It's all deeply embarrassing for China's government. There's nothing really like the free market to expose the system's weak points, and that's exactly what we've been seeing this week here in Shanghai.
Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, David.
All right, let's do the numbers. Despite the rally in China being attributed to policy creativity, not necessarily a shift in the perceived health of China's economy, European markets are up on the news. London's 100 share index is up 0.25% now, after the Dow fell 392 points yesterday, 2.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are each up in the 0.75% range. Still, this is the first week of the new year, and the Dow fell 5.2% so far. The S&P 500 is down 4.9% this week. The December jobs report from the government is due in about an hour and a half, and forecasts, at least, are for another pretty strong month. This week, federal health officials announced a bold experiment. They want to know if tackling non-medical problems like homelessness and domestic violence could improve care and lower health spending. The evidence so far has been thin. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Dan Gorenstein reports.
From Portland, Oregon, to Camden, New Jersey, to Dallas, Texas, doctors and hospitals are testing unconventional ways to treat very sick, very expensive patients.
Right now, we have many, many organizations trying many, many different things, and we just don't really know what actually works.
That's Dr. Darshak Sanghavi with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Over the next 5 years, CMS will spend $157 million to study the impact of screening, referring, and organizing care based around conditions like food insecurity, social isolation, and unemployment. Harvard economist Amitabh Chandra is all for data collection, but says that money could be better spent.
If you ask me, what would you rather spend on, the thing that works with certainty or the thing that may work? I'd say the thing that works with certainty.
Instead, Chandra says the federal government should step up funding for community health centers and hospitals that serve low-income communities. Interventions, he says, that we know improve health and are cost-effective. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
State transportation officials will be relieved President Obama signed a five-year transportation bill. This is a big ticket, $300 billion. Congress had been paying for some road and bridge projects with a series of ad hoc fixes, but it is a new day now. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, Bradley George reports.
Just north of Atlanta, workers unload a dump truck full of dirt at what will be the entrance point to an express tollway. When finished in 2018, these toll lanes will help commuters avoid the region's notorious rush hour traffic. That project managed to get funding, but the state made no headway on a host of other road projects until now. Natalie Dale is spokeswoman for the Georgia Department of Transportation.
We've got shelves of projects, you know, just because we didn't have certainty as federal funding is concerned doesn't mean we didn't continue to plan.
Dale says the state will start clearing off those shelves next month, everything from highway beautification to resurfacing and maintenance on interstates. Georgia couldn't put those projects out to bid because the DOT wasn't sure federal dollars would be there.
And this is key because federal funding is about one-fourth of state transportation spending on average.
Ann Stauffer of the Pew Charitable Trust says the short-term fixes passed by Congress force states to make tough choices.
And so they often have to either delay or postpone or focus on doing sort of quick shovel-ready projects.
Randy Lake is CEO of Oldcastle Materials. The Atlanta-based company provides asphalt and concrete to more than 40 states. He likes shovel-ready projects, but he loves big-ticket items.
What we have started to build over the last 10 or 15 years is just the capacity to take on larger work, because we would anticipate and see just by pure population growth the need for increased and better infrastructure.
Lake says his company is looking forward to helping states meet a pent-up demand for major highway projects.
What will be exciting is having kind of a five-year view to be able to actually execute on jobs or projects that increase capacity.
But there's one job Congress didn't execute on, raising the federal gas tax, which fills the coffers of the Highway Trust Fund. It hasn't gone up since the early 90s, and collections are falling short. That could lead to more uncertainty for states when the highway bill expires in 2020. In Atlanta, I'm Bradley George for Marketplace.
Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Stephanie Hughes produces our tech program. Our digital producer is Tobin Lowe. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.